Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. This is Mental Health Awareness Month. We'll be discussing signs, symptoms, and the stigma of mental illnesses. With me in studio, Joyce Johnston is the Director of Programs for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. NAMI St. Louis helps the mentally ill and their families through education, support, advocacy, and research. Dr. Ahsan Khan is a psychiatrist with St. Louis University Hospital and a NAMI St. Louis board member. Mike Eisenbeth is also a NAMI St. Louis board member. He has experience with depression. Thank you all so much for being with us to talk about this important subject.
Yes.
Great to have
Absolutely.
You. Joyce, let me begin with you. What is the biggest challenge in the field today?
The biggest challenge in the field today is a lack of psychiatrists. And also lack of funding to help people who either aren't employed or don't have a lot of income or no income. They call our helpline, and we try to find resources for them, but it's very difficult for them to get services and medications and even to go in the hospital. So that's a huge thing, and then they don't get the treatment they need, and they get worse.
Do we have any sense of numbers in our community? How many people would you think are suffering from mental illness?
Boy, I don't know. One in five people is affected by mental illness.
Okay, 20%, that's
yes.
a pretty significant
yes,
number.
Yes, it is.
Dr. Khan, when we talk about mental illness, I think it means different things to different people because it really covers a broad spectrum of conditions.
Absolutely.
Give us some sense of what we're talking about.
Well, there are a variety of mental illnesses, mental disorders, and every mental disorder is different in terms of symptomatology. Statistics in terms of prevalence and incident rates, and this, according to like how they present, what is their prodromal phase and all that. Now, there are certain disorders where we can treat them. They are episodic, and there are certain mental disorders which are more chronic and lifelong, like diabetes or hypertension, if you'd like to take an analogy for that. So let's talk about depression, for example. So depression is very common. It affects almost 7% of U.S. population at any given time or any year. Mm-hmm. But if you break it down in females and males, you have even higher percentage. So it's like 8 to 12% for males and almost 20-plus percent for females. So it's 2-to-1 ratio for depression. Now, depression is very treatable at this point. We have so many medications. I believe the challenge is, like she mentioned, about getting the right treatment at the right time, getting to see a psychiatrist. Majority of the depressed patients, they would go to family practice doctor, their primary care physician, and those are the front runners. So, and compared to depression, we have schizophrenia, which is more chronic and usually treated or seen by a psychiatrist and should be. So these are the different probably aspects of different mental disorders, in my opinion.
Well, you mentioned depression, and Mike joins us because, Mike, it's my understanding that you have suffered from depression. Tell us about that experience in your case.
I was diagnosed about 14 and a half years ago with major depression and severe anxiety. And it, you know, I what I've learned over time is that even though we can treat depression and we can give a lot of people help from it, there's still a number of us, including me, who medication really don't. I've tried just about everything that's on the market, and I get some relief, but I definitely have not been cured or put into remission. I've received shock treatment. You know, that helped in a mild way. A number of other treatments, and I'm frankly right in the middle of a pretty difficult episode right now where it's just hard to get out of bed. And, you know, I say that to some people, and they're like, well, just get out of bed. And I can't explain how difficult it is. And, you know, there's maybe 3 days a week where I don't get out of bed until almost noon or after. You know, the just sobbing sometimes for no reason at all. Just this cloud of sadness that is always hovering, and I just can't escape that. You know, irritability. I have had 3 suicide attempts where, you know, it's not that I wanted to be dead, but I just didn't want to live this way anymore. And so, you know, it's complicated, and, you know, there are treatments that help. I'm able to get to work on time most days, and I'm very blessed to be able to do that because I've met a number of people that can't even do that. So, you know, I think what I have come to realize is that there are so many people out there suffering that don't have anyone that understands. And, you know, unfortunately for me, I have people who understand, but even then I feel like I'm suffering alone a lot of times. And I know there's a lot of people out there the same way.
Yeah, I wanted to ask how this is impacting the people around you, family, friends.
It's a, you know, that's a great question because, you know, we talk about, you know, one in five people suffer from a mental illness. Well, those one in five people belong to families and have jobs and, you know, have friends, and those people are affected, you know, profoundly. And Joyce could talk about a lot of the programs that NAMI offers for those family members. And my wife and I speak together a lot of times about our experience, and I talk about what it's like to have the illness. She talks about what it's like to be a caregiver and to, you know, to feel helpless a lot of times and to have her life plans interrupted. And it's, you know, it's a difficult thing there too. And the caregivers can feel just as alone as the people who are suffering. And, you know, it's a secret that we all keep for a long time as well. And, you know, once we come out and tell people about that, people react in odd ways, even with family members.
He makes an interesting point, and that being that there are so many other people are involved. So if one in five people is affected by mental illness, how many more then are affected by it who are not not
true.
Afflicted themselves? What kinds of programs do you have for the?
Well, our main signature program is our family-to-family class. It's a 12-week, two-and-a-half-hour class. And families learn all about mental illness. They learn about the medications and therapies. And we teach them coping skills. We teach them better communication skills. We do role plays. We do a skit where the people have to do a diagram while they're hearing voices. It's very interesting how that works because they get very frustrated. Mm-hmm. So we also have a basics class for families of children with mental illnesses or emotional disturbances, and that is a 6-week class. We've just recently added NAMI Homefront, which is for families of veterans and military folks who come back and they either have PTSD, depression, anxiety, things like that. And so that's a brand new program.
We'll be getting into some of that in our next segment. Dr. Khan, one of the things that Mike said that is interesting, prompted a question in my mind, is I think many people, when they think of depression, think it's been triggered by something like a death in the family or something like that. Is it always triggered by an event, or is it something that just presents one day?
Well, there are two schools of thoughts in that. Majority of the time, depression is triggered by life events. Mm-hmm. It might depend upon the coping style, coping techniques of that patient, because usually everyone goes through life events, routine life events like losses, family members, and all that. So that is one type of depression. But second school of thought said that there is endogenous type of depression, like you are prone or you are genetically loaded to have depression. It doesn't matter whether something triggered that or not. But majority of the time, the depression is triggered by some kind of a loss of relationship, loss of family members, financial loss, things like that. So that is correct.
Right. One of the issues that comes up always in this discussion is the issue of stigma. And that, I have to suspect, is a major one because you've got to get everybody on board when you're dealing with issues such as these, don't you, Joyce?
Stigma is just a terrible barrier for people to receive care and continue with their treatment. And when you tell somebody you have a mental illness, you get odd reactions, as Mike explained. But also, many, many people are working and in school and doing all kinds of productive things in their lives, and you would never know they even have a mental illness. And they're not going to disclose if they think they're going to get that odd reaction. There are a few people who do things that are horrendous, but most people with mental illness are not violent. They are 11 times more likely to be treated badly than they would treat someone else badly.
Mike, you spent a long time as a journalist, and I'm just curious as to what your thoughts are when you read lines in the newspaper or hear on television that so-and-so, a former mental patient, has just been arrested. It seems to me that that is kind of a problem when it comes to the stigma question.
It really is. I kind of try to put myself a lot of time in the reporter's shoes, and I think so often when we hear someone, whether it's a school shooting or some other kind of mass violent situation, right away everyone thinks, well, that guy must be crazy. And, so then there's confirmation if the reporters do note that, he has had mental illness history. But I feel kind of conflicted in ever even mentioning that, because so few people that have mental illnesses will ever become, as Joy said, will ever become violent or do anything in the extreme. And so I think what we do as a reading public and viewing public is we say, well, okay, this guy did this. He had a mental illness. So now I'm going to connect mental illness with violence. And it's just not the case. What we do need to do, however, is we do need to make sure that people are getting the treatment that they need and that someone is paying attention to them to help them out. I give my wife my medication when things are really rough for me because I don't want to have access to it, A, and B, I want to make sure I'm taking it. And she's making sure that that happens. And there's so many people that get isolated with a mental illness that a lot of times the reason that they become, homicidal, which is rare, suicidal, which is more often, or just unable to manage their life, is because they don't have someone who supports them and helps them and sees them through, or they're not able to get psychiatric care or see a therapist because of financial reasons.
I have to take a break right now. You've just heard from Mike Eisenbath. He was a board member with the National Alliance on Mental Illness St. Louis. That's NAMI. Also with me in studio is Joyce Johnston, Director of Programs for NAMI, and Dr. Asan Khan, also a NAMI board member, with us in studio. Back to continue the conversation, I have a number of very interesting emails and tweets here that I want to get to as time will allow. We'll do that when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Asan Khan, Mike Eisenbath, and Joyce Johnston from NAMI. That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in St. Louis. Doctor, let me come back to you. Where are we with regard to research in mental illness?
Well, psychiatry is a field which has a lot of potential for research because we are still trying to figure out why we have mental illness. We don't have too many tests available. Now, in terms of research, drug companies definitely are working on finding new medications. If I may say, in the last 20 years, we have maybe 30-plus different psychiatric medications. There is new medication which is in the pipeline for depression, which can take care of acute suicidal thoughts within hours, at the most 24 hours, which is called ketamine. And it is available, and they are working on a single isomer of that medication. In terms of schizophrenia, there are many medications which are under development, as well as for anxiety and other disorders. So future of psychiatry is bright in terms of having more options, more treatment options available. Now, I would like to make a comment about what Mike has said, which is very important. I believe, like what he mentioned, that when he doesn't want to get out of his bed, people will say, just get out. So they don't understand. So the key here is the education of the public. And NAMI is doing a fabulous job in educating families who have loved ones suffering from depression or a variety of psychiatric disorders. And I believe we need to encourage NAMI and encourage people to join NAMI so that they will have a lot of tools, a lot of knowledge how to deal with loved ones who are suffering from those disorders.
And one of the methods, Joyce, that you're using to deal with that is your walk, your annual walk on Saturday in Forest Park. Gets underway at 9, registration a little bit earlier than that.
Yes.
It's a fundraiser and also an educational opportunity, right?
It is, and we need people to come just to show that we are fighting stigma and that we do stand up for people who have mental illness. Yeah.
Well, good. Hope you have a great turnout. I know
you
normally do. Let's get to some of the emails that that we've accumulated here during the last several minutes. This is an issue I wanted to get to. It's a tweet in which the writer says, police can get critical incident team training that helps mental health consumers get help. In other words, these are officers who have been specially trained to recognize someone who has a mental illness when they are confronted by them and deal with them accordingly.
Yes, they are trained for 40 hours. They do role plays with actors who act out different psychiatric illnesses. They're taught how to de-escalate the situation rather than escalate it, and they also try to transport the person who is in the psychiatric crisis to a medical facility versus jail.
This is something we've talked about in the past, the fact that jails in so many instances are used as a warehouse for people with mental illness. And, Doctor, that can't be a good thing.
No, and in fact, at this point, I'm covering jail. I see patients at jail, just Clinton County Detention Center, and I've seen that almost every day, that there are inmates who have underlying psychiatric issues, and I believe we need to move a step further in terms of having correctional officers at jail or every jail trained how to deal with those patients, because you will have patients or you will have inmates there who probably are malingering, but there are true psychiatric patients there, right, which needs to be attended and addressed accordingly.
Mike, can you imagine yourself, given the situation you're in, being confined to a jail?
No, and a lot of times I think we put ourselves in certain jails and we isolate, but at a certain point, You have to be shown understanding, and you have to be shown compassion, I think, when you're dealing with something like this. And I'm just, I can only imagine the lack of compassion and understanding that would happen in a prison situation where, with some psychiatric help, with some understanding, the person might completely do away with any criminal activity that was occurring.
Yeah, that would certainly have to be. What about, Joyce, what about courts? Are courts more responsive and receptive to dealing with these issues?
Well, we do have some folks who volunteer at the courts in St. Louis and St. Louis County to help the folks who have mental illnesses work with the courts. And there are mental health courts now and drug courts. So those are very helpful for the person also.
Yeah. Back to the emails here. We have one from Kelsey who writes. It's a long, I won't read it all, but she is African-American, and she says that there seems to be a particular stigma in the African-American community. You're nodding, Joyce. Is that something you're confronting?
We are well aware of that. The African-American community is already stigmatized, and now they don't discuss mental illness. They don't tell people they have mental illness. They keep it a secret in their family. And so we are doing an outreach to African Americans right now called Sharing Hope. And we go to churches and we do a one-hour presentation, someone that is a family member and someone with a mental illness, and they actually openly discuss their mental illness and their family situation. This seems to open the door to allow other African Americans to be able to do that and to see it's okay to disclose. Once you disclose, then you can get the help you need.
I have another email here. As I say, I have several, and this is particularly disturbing. Tim writes, I work in higher education, which is deemed the increasing rates of depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideology among today's college students, a mental health crisis. Doctor, something that you're confronting, seeing that is a real problem in college campuses.
He is absolutely right. Statistics are... I believe you have males who are between 15 and 24, kind of a leading cause of death for them is suicide. And it is 7-1 when you are talking about male to female in that age population. So they do attempt, and they do attempt with some fatal means compared to females who probably not using those fatal means. So,
Don, I'll mention also, I'm sorry, Dr. Khan, but one of the things that we also will discover, I think, if we really would dig into it, and especially on college campuses, you know, a lot of males, a lot of men self-medicate when they have a mental illness. And that could be drugs or alcohol. You know, I think it's not an uncommon thing at all to find out that someone who's perhaps an alcoholic, that the reason that began was because of an underlying mental illness. And, you know, under the influence of drugs and alcohol, you know, I think a lot of our inhibitions to do things, you know, such as take our own life, really become apparent.
Yeah. Go ahead, Doctor. Thanks, Mike.
Right. So it is a common or a significant issue. If you look at overall suicides, like 2/3 of the time, depression is involved with those suicides, mm-hmm. or traffic accidents, or even substance abuse issues, or even medical problems. So it is a problem on the college campuses, like Mike mentioned, about self-medication. And sometimes self-medications can go too far, where you can be dependent, and while you are inhibited or under-intoxicated, things happen.
Right. Are medications relatively easy to come by? I mean, obviously, you have to be diagnosed and work with a doctor.
Right. I believe I can talk about St. Louis University. We do have a psychiatrist who is available, who goes to the education or the medical student center or student center where they can get help. I hope and believe that every college should have something like that, or at least somebody at a social worker level or at a primary care level would like to diagnose and then send them over if they need. But timing is everything. Key is the diagnosis, key is the education, key is like getting rid of stigma and get help.
Right. I have, along these lines, I have a tweet from Amy who writes about how frustrating it is to try to find the correct combo of treatments when you're going through depression. Is there anything to keep in mind to help?
Well, nowadays we are living in an era of individualized or personalized medication, and we do have medications available which can be chosen based on patients like genetics, patients' age or obesity or not. Even we do have now GeneSight testing available, so you can test somebody genetically and find out which medication will work better for them compared to the others. And they will give you a pretty good map, roadmap, for those medications to choose from. So there are things available at this time. You need to ask your doctor about those GeneSight testing, and it can be tested without any problem.
Right. I have an email from Emily who writes, I'm a survivor of complex trauma. It took many years of recovery for me to realize that my lived experience of PTSD was not a liability, but rather a strength that increased my ability to truly bear witness to others' experienced mental illness. I bring this up. Obviously, you're using Mike, who is going through this, as an advocate for your organization. This, Joyce, has to be a good thing to get people who will be the voice of the problem.
This is such a good thing, because once people can talk about it like they talk about diabetes or heart disease, because the brain is part of the body and there's nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed about when you have a mental illness. It's just an illness like any other.
Doctor, back to you, because you've mentioned a couple of situations with regard to depression and also with suicide that there seems to be a gender component here. You said, I think if I remember correctly, you said that more women than men suffer from depression. Is that correct?
Right. They suffer from depression, but if it comes to suicide, then males between that age range of 15 and 24, they will attempt more, or they will use fatal means to attempt suicide, like 7-1.
What conclusions do you draw from that?
I believe whenever males become kind of suicidal or depressed, they usually have more access to firearms, or they can think of fatal means. They have more probably disinhibition, if you like to say that, or they are more probably risk takers. So that might be the reason for that dichotomy in terms of attempts and the means they attempted suicide.
Mm. Our time is winding down. Joyce, I wanted to just ask you quickly about a teenage mental illness. Is this a problem that is relatively small or growing? Or
no, I would say that it's growing. As Dr. Khan said, the suicide is the second leading cause of death in 10 to 24-year-olds. And so that's a huge thing. And we know that teenagers need to get their treatment as soon as possible. the sooner that they get treatment, the more likely they are to recover or to recover better than someone who waits and waits and doesn't get help.
But it would generally have to mean that someone would have to recognize the problem other
Correct.
Than the teen and get them the help that they need.
And we're teaching mental health first aid now also. That's being taught all across the state. And mental health first aid should be, everyone should go to mental health first aid. It teaches you the signs and symptoms and how to help the person.
Okay. Well, there's an awful lot to be thinking about here, and it's an important subject, as we said at the outset. I wish we had more time, but we don't. We have to say goodbye. I'll remind everybody that you've got your walk this Saturday, right? It is this Saturday, starting at 9 o'clock is a registration that will take place prior to that, but it's all to raise awareness, education, and also raise a little money for NIMI. Thank you all so much for being with us. Joyce Johnson, great to see you
thank
here.
You.
Dr. Khan, thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
With us. And Mike Eisenbach, thank you for joining us sort of long distance. Appreciate having you with us.
Thank you, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.